You're listening to the Raising Humans Kind podcast with family psychologist Ashley, where we dive into the big topics, the stuff that really matters in raising your small humans kindly, so that together we can raise humankind. In this series, you're going to hear solo episodes from me all about the needs of our stuck and sensitive kids. I hope it challenges you, and I hope it inspires you to find your own unique pathway in raising your small human kindly. Welcome back, everybody. I have a wonderful guest with me here today, Kirsty Wirth from Cultured Wellness, and we are going to dive into the topic of picky eating and the microbiome. So if you're ever wondering whether or not your child's physical imbalances or gut can actually impact what they desire to eat, then today's episode is for you. So this is a bit of a follow-up from a few episodes I did on food and boundaries and alarm a few weeks ago. So I'll link all of those episodes below. And if you want to dive deeper, Kirsty is actually offering a course at the moment where she is teaching parents all about how to support the child's physical body and rebalance their microbiome so that they will desire a more diverse range of foods. And I will be doing a guest appearance on that course talking about the role of alarm and how we can support children to reduce alarm so that that isn't impacting their reluctance to try new foods. So it's a really comprehensive course, like none other that I've seen before, because it's coming at picky eating from multiple different angles. Okay, so let's dive into today. Thank you so much for being here today, Kirsty. I am super excited to get into this topic with you. Can you tell us a little bit about who you are and your story?
Hello, thanks so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here and I can't wait to dive on in. There's actually, there's two stories to this, you know, because of course my story and picky eating and fussy eating, even as an adult, is quite interesting. And then how, you know, it leads on to how it reflects within your children. But, you know, I have always had gut issues. I've always had bloating, distension, gas, pain, fatigue, all of those kinds of things. And as I got older and as I got into sort of becoming an adult, I could see that food hurts, that food I can survive. So it was really interesting for me that I had kind of morphed into, like at one point I was down to zucchini and lamb. They were the only two foods that I could eat without having some form of physical change in my body. And then mental health and cognitive change. And so this was the space of me and where I was at when I actually fell pregnant with my beautiful boy, Noah. And then when I went through my pregnancy and then when, you know, Noah was born, it wasn't surprising now that I reflect on it that, you know, he had bloating, gas, loose stools, yellow stools, covered in rashes, had trouble feeding, had oral thrush. I had, you know, thrush on my nipples. He had cradle cap all through his head. I just had no idea what this all meant. No concept. Child comes out, got all the fingers and toes, off you go. You're fine. No, like just no idea. No idea. So Noah's 15. So he was born in 2008. So, you know, this is back sort of in the day a little bit now when you think about how much has changed over that sort of 15 years. But very interestingly, as we went through this journey, Noah was kind of the perfect storm for him because he had ear infections. So he had antibiotics, which is really disrupting for the gut microbiome. He had a lot of thrush and I had mastitis, so I had more antibiotics. And then he was put on a formula because he had a lot of colic and he had a lot of pain. So he had a lot of Nurofen and Panadol. And so when I talk about the perfect storm, these are all the things that are really not awesome for a developing gut microbiome. And so, you know, when I reflect on it now, of course, it's not surprising that when we came to sort of first foods, he only wanted white foods. So foods that was going to feed the thrush, the candida, foods that are going to feed the infections. And so his start in life, when it came to food, it, we weren't able to develop that as I now look, you know, and my daughter who came along later, would go to the fridge when she was 18 months and just spoon out liver pate. Like, okay, here's your breakfast. And she would literally take the tub of liver pate and eat it, like, fridge door open, you know. And I'm like, you know what, if that's your breakfast, you go for it. Like, of all the nourishing foods, coming from dear Noah, who was like, you know, the cruscuits and all those things, that was his only foods. So as he grew and as he developed, he didn't develop cognitively, like, appropriately. He lost his language at around 18 months. He did have language up until around 18 months, but he got quite a significant gut infection. He got more antibiotics. He had like worms. He had all of the stuff going on. And so by the time he started school at five, he was still completely nonverbal, really intense rages. He wouldn't sleep. Picky eating, like, he was down, same as me, down to two foods. And he just wasn't present. He wasn't present at all. And so we had a couple of kind of roads to take there. And he had a diagnosis of ASD at 3.5. And we were, okay, well, this is our road. But, you know, when we were told that this is going to be, your child's going to be nonverbal, your child is not going to attend school, your child's going to live with you forever, your child's not going to reach any milestones, in the back of my mind, I was always like, but what's with the rashes, the skin, the yellow diarrhea, the screaming all night, the pain, the, like, you know, when kids arch their back and they, like, they have this real pain expression, what's with that? And, you know, I'm such a curious person. When you go through and, you know, when you study a PhD and the high level of education that I did, you're just curious. You're just asking questions all the time. So that's always been me. And, you know, I'm very fortunate to have my husband in the medical field as well. And he would look and go, look, like, yellow stool, that's not appropriate. So, you know, we went on this adventure of, okay, he's got an ASD diagnosis, but why don't we just get curious? Why don't we just have a look and see what's going on within his body? And, you know, that was a long time ago. We had to send tests over to Europe for all of the investigations that we did, including a stool analysis, a heavy metal analysis. We looked at metabolite analysis, and we kind of just did the full picture. And it turned out that Noah did have a really serious gut infection that's actually quite life-threatening. It's called Clostridium difficile, and it just wasn't picked up. So Noah was given a diagnosis, and it was more about his behavior and about his development, rather than the diagnosis was Clostridium difficile, which is very, very scary for the body, that was impacting his development, his cognitive ability, his ability to socialize and interact. So once we found the root cause, the base cause, then the sky was the limit. Then we could actually make change. We could action change. And then that just had this amazing ripple effect within his body, within his personality, within his mind. And you may have seen, and I probably will cry, but I'm not going to, because I'm going to hold on tight. But he got his first 2 A's in his report card last term. We only just got it last week. So he's been getting B's and C's, and he's in year 9, and he goes to a neurotypical school and all these kinds of things. And he's just amazing, and he talks, but he got his first 2 A's. Can you believe it?
Well done, Noah. That's amazing.
And, you know, like, it's not a representation of Noah at all getting an A. Like, I know that. And, you know, of course, getting a grade, there's far more to a child than just what that grade is. It's much bigger than that. But, you know, he was able to, you know, satisfy the mainstream of just doing what the mainstream does of being able to, like, rock up to school and do your assignments. And but one of them, I think, is always funny, because it was for drama. And I've told you this, living with Noah is a Mr. Bean / Jim Carrey episode. So of course he got a name for drama.
Oh, that's incredible. What a different fork in the road your family has gone down.
Yeah. And so for me, like my, what I can eat now, the sky's the limit. Mm-hmm. You know, Laura and I both had transplants. We both had some what's called a fecal microbial transfer. We were part of a really amazing research study in Canada. So the first of its kind, and myself and the two kids both had these transfers, which basically reseeded our gut microbiome so we could start again. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I'm so passionate about what I do, is because I literally saw the day before and I literally saw the day after.
Yeah.
And like, you know, seeing a child that couldn't even function, speak, communicate, to literally the next day being able to communicate with, you know, some actual words, and being able to develop and grow. And for me, being able to eat something and like, I don't need to go to the toilet. I've actually held that food in. And in fact, I've got some energy, you know. Yeah. So, yeah, it's been incredible.
And so tell us about the science of why that happens. Why is that gut health so intertwined and linked with picky eating?
Yeah.
Or selective eating?
Yeah. So our gut microbiome can either be our friend or our foe, basically. So we have trillions of bacteria, yeast, and viruses that live within our body. So our body is mostly made up of that, you know, amazing sort of ecosystem, and actually very few DNA within our body. It's about, you know, depending on which research paper you read, it's 70-30 or 20-80. So it's not actually our DNA that represents who we are or what we do. It's actually these incredible bacteria and fungi and viruses. And so they can actually be beneficial for us. So when they live within our microbiome, within our gut, they can be beneficial. So they can be producing metabolites. So you can imagine these amazing little microbes sitting there, their byproduct of what they release, like these little cool little gases that they release, can either be the precursor for us to make energy, for our brains to work, for us to be able to digest our food, for us to be able to build a robust immune system. So they can either produce those, or if we have pathogenic bacteria in there or viruses or fungi, they produce toxic inflammatory metabolites. And they can go into our brain and they can alter our growth and development, which is exactly what happened to Noah. So the Clostridium difficile releases very, very toxic inflammatory metabolites into the gut. That then breaks down the whole lining of the gut, which then results in what's called intestinal permeability. So some people know that as leaky gut.
Leaky gut, yeah.
And so, you know, and then everyone does this when we start talking about leaky gut, but it basically just opens, like the gut has permeability, but when it's open more, and then you've got undigested food sitting there, it then leaks into the bloodstream, fires up the immune response, and then it actually leaks into the brain. And so what was happening for Noah was he had all of these extremely toxic metabolites, then, you know, hexa-LPS and TMAO and all these things that we can test now. And it was passing through the blood-brain barrier, which also becomes leaky when you've got leaky gut, and it's going into his brain, and it was actually attaching onto receptors and changing his ability to develop, speak, grow, interact, and to be able to regulate his mood. So when you've got all those toxins in your brain, they put you into a fight or flight response. So I know you talk about this a lot, and you're hypervigilant, you're in extreme alarm. Anything that happens is going to be the worst thing that's ever happened to you. And you can't manage yourself. You're ready for the worst thing that's about to happen. So you just try and keep everything safe. You try and keep the same thing all the time. You can't kind of explore and grow and try new things. You certainly wouldn't rock up to school and try and go into a classroom on your own with a new teacher and try and make a friend. You know, you literally can't do it because your gut's not making those beautiful neurotransmitters and all of those beautiful metabolites to help you. So we want in our gut amazing bacteria and ancestral bacteria like Acomansia, for example, and Rhizoburia, and all of these amazing bacteria that make the starting points that make all and go through all these steps that create who we are. So our gut just starts everything, like absolutely everything. And so without it, and when it's not functioning effectively, as you know, as I saw with myself and with Noah, you can't develop, and you can't therefore make appropriate decisions as an adult or a child. And you're always going to be behaving out of a fear response. You're always going to be behaving out of a what's going to happen to me, as opposed to behaving out of a safety response, which is really important for kids as they grow up and develop. So I've seen I work with kids that their whole development has been around developing through trauma, but there's been no trauma because the gut is causing the trauma, which is what happened with Noah.
Mm-hmm. And so when you say that kind of nervous system response, is that what is leading a lot to this selective eating, or is it more to do, can you go into that a little bit, or is it also to do with different bugs? And
Yes. So we, okay, so your digestive system.
Big question, you can just add.
I know.
So how do I break this down?
Our digestive system literally starts in our mouth and ends out the other end. So we always just think it's the gut, but it actually starts in our brain and starts in the cephalic phase of our brain, which tells, we see the food, ooh, that looks good. I'm going to start to make some enzymes in my mouth, some enzymes in my gut, going to start to make some stomach acid because I want to eat that. And so it starts here and then goes the whole way down. So if our brain is in that alarm state, the cephalic phase isn't going to work to go, oh, that food looks amazing. So then we're not going to fire up the enzymes in our mouth to start to create the digestive process. And we're absolutely not going to get that connection, which is through that vagus tone, that connection to tell our pancreas, can you please make some digestive enzymes for us? And also our stomach, can you please make some stomach acid for us? And so when the food that our child's eating goes into the digestive system, it will go through undigested. And so then when it reaches the stomach undigested and it goes then down through the small intestine and the large intestine, it will cause pain, it will cause bloating, you'll just feel ouchy, it will hurt. And then, of course, undigested food doesn't feed all the beneficial microbes within our gut. Unfortunately, things like worms and parasites and small intestinal overgrowths like staph or strep, they love undigested food. That's they're in there waiting for that moment to shine. And so then they get fed. And then we don't want to feed worms. We don't want to feed overgrowths. So when they get fed, they're releasing those toxic metabolites. And then once again, it's going back into the brain. Now, these amazing microbes that we've got, for example, let's choose Bifidobacterium, which most people know about now. It's in most of the little baby biotics and probiotics and so forth. They help us to make B vitamins. And B vitamins are really significant when it comes to sensory development. B vitamins are really important when it comes to our mental health and our resilience, when it comes to making serotonin and dopamine and all of these incredible neurotransmitters or just feel-good chemicals that our children feel resilient and they want to give something a go. They want to try something. So if we don't have any of those Bifidobacterium strains in our gut, we're not going to be able to create those B vitamins. And then we're not going to be able to create that beautiful, amazing, resilient mental health picture of, okay, bring on the broccoli. I'm going to give that a go. You know, like your child's going to go, nah, no thank you. because it's not, because there's the resources aren't there to be able to want to try something new. So it's not the child's personality. Mm. It's nothing you're doing as a parent. It's got nothing to do with all those things. If the mechanics, if the foundations aren't there, the scaffolding's not there, there's no way they're going to go and say, hey, let's give sauerkraut a try. They're not going to do it. And it's the same with me as an adult. I had to build, once I had my microbial transfer and my gut microbiome was building, I then had to really build up my mental health and my resilience to try foods that previously would literally cause me so much pain I'd be in bed for 3 days, mm-hmm. or that'd cause me so much pain that I'd be brain fogged and just pass out, you know, at the restaurant because I was so tired. Mm-hmm. So it's a stepped process.
Yeah.
And we know
I was just going to say that those descriptions you described, they're so hard for us to know if that's what's happening in our children.
Yep.
Like we don't, you, even as adults, it can be hard to link that food or, and I imagine that that plays a huge role for kids too in not wanting to try things. If you, like, food's just not feeling good. So you stick to the two or three safe foods that, you know, feel the best.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's really interesting. And it's very like, wow, I could go to town on all of this, but funnily enough, like for Noah and I, white foods were the safest foods. Mm. Now, the reason why they were the safest foods was because they didn't have any other, you know, compounds in them that could hurt us. So let's talk about a nut, for example. It has phytic acid around the outside. That phytic acid, if your digestive system's not working, you won't be able to digest or like to be able to assimilate and break down that phytic acid. If that's not going to happen, the phytic acid then requires and sequests all the B6 and the zinc in our body to help with that process. B6 and zinc are absolutely vital for the digestive system, for mental health, for growth and development, for resilience. And so intuitively, in some way, you know, like, well, at least with the white food, it doesn't have all those, you know, phytic acids and all these compounds that are going through the digestive system undigested, causing pain. So I'm going to choose that. Mm-hmm. And you wouldn't choose a tomato, for example, because it's got, nightshades in it. And undigested tomato, the nightshades will fire up all of the nervous system. You're hyper-stimulated, hyper-vigilant. There's salicylates all through that because it's not digested, mm-hmm. and therefore it goes into the bloodstream. So the food's not the villain at all. It's what our body can do with it at that point in time and how we will select to keep ourselves safe. So it's I don't blame kids when they do that, you know, and I just think, oh, thank you for doing your best to keep yourself safe. But as the adult, we need to go and do some investigation, because when kids are, when this, you know, microbiome is thriving, when they're feeling like, you know, they can digest their food and they're popping awesome poos out the other end, you cannot believe the foods that kids will go for. Like we were just talking off before we jumped on about my daughter, like, going for the liver pate straight out of the fridge, and her favorite food is Brussels sprouts, and all these things that you get to when the digestive system's working and you've got enough zinc for stomach acid, B6, and all of the nutrients that that little body needs.
Yeah. And I know there's so many parents going, okay, well, how do we get there? How does it happen where your child's favorite food is Brussels sprouts? So I want to talk about, like, practically, you know, so we know, you and I both talk about, in order to heal anything, it's both the physical and the emotional. So I often talk about it when people come to me with emotional issues, that we also have to look at the physical body as well.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of concern about if we add too much control to food for our children, that's going to create more desire and more cravings. And so how do we negate that concern at the same time as providing them with the nourishment and that physical side of things that they really need in order to be able to heal and put their best foot forward.
Yeah, yeah. So knowledge is power, really, as a parent. And so the first thing that I would encourage parents to do is to investigate. So getting a stool test and finding out what's going on within your child's gut is the most empowering thing that you can do. So let's go on an adventure and understand that. So your child falls over, they're holding their arm. You take them to get a scan. The scan comes up that they've broken their arm. And so you put a cast on it and you don't let them go in the shower. You don't let them go and play a game of netball. You don't let them go down to the beach and get sand all through it. And you don't let them try and get out the saw and cut it off. Like, you know, and you, you are putting boundaries in place because your child has an injury. Your child has hurt themselves. Mm-hmm. And so you do everything that you can to heal that.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen a picky eater that doesn't have a gut microbiome problem. So they've got the broken arm in their gut.
Yeah.
When you have a child that says, my tummy's sore, I feel funny when I eat that food, go and do the scan like the broken arm and really honor that your child is telling you something doesn't feel right. And go on the same adventure. You get the test. Then, oh, actually, there's a parasite in there, or there's, you know, Clostridium difficile. If they've got that in there, you want to put the cast on and allow yourself to be able to provide that stability for your child to recover from that injury. And that means, you know, making the right choices with the food that's going to support that and helping them with, you know, recovering from that in whatever way that might be. Now, that might be some fermented foods or some herbs. It might just be, you know, providing some bone broths and soups for a little while. So very long story and a big analogy to basically say I would investigate. Yeah. Because when you've got that power to know, like when I found out Noah had Clostridium difficile, I was like, what do we need to do? What do we need to do? Oh my gosh, Clostridium difficile feeds off of carbohydrates and the white foods that he's eating. I can't give that to him anymore. It's ruining his brain. What do I need now? What tools? How do I empower myself to make great decisions, to be able to put the cast on and provide the boundaries?
And so I imagine that your kids went to birthday parties and things like that when they were younger. And it's a little bit different now. You've got older kids, so it's a bit easier to have these conversations and explain really what's going on. You held those boundaries at the parties. How did that look and work for you?
I was so steadfast.
Yeah.
And sometimes it was really hard for me, and there wasn't a lot of conversation and language and stuff around it like there is now. But having the stool test and being able to name what was going on was amazing, because in those parties and in those times, I was then able to say to, you know, the host of the party and to my family and friends, look, Noah's got a gut infection, so can you just help me to keep an eye on him, because he's going to want those foods. And I asked my community to be involved, and I asked my family to be involved, and I explained why, rather than my child can't eat that, don't let him eat it, and all of those kinds of things. There was more behind it than me just like, oh, my child can't have that party food. It was bigger than that. Lots of understanding for the kids, lots of storytelling, lots of play-based stuff, which, you know, I know that you love to do, and empowering the kids, like, that this food is going to completely change your life. So let's go.
Yeah, I think that's beautiful. And it's such a good analogy with that more physical broken bone that I think we can all relate to in, you know, in such a better way. But so for their parents who are fearing that if we say no to the party food, even though we've got this kind of short-term understanding, okay, we've got to heal, however long that takes is going to be so different for every child.
Yeah.
But I get the sense that parents are still sitting there feeling like, oh, but I hear so much about these restrictions and the cravings. So I've got my own ideas about what leads to, you know, real challenges with food. And I'm sure you've got like a physical take on it. So if the child has like, if you are able to heal and they do have a diverse microbiome, do you feel like that is what's going to really nurture them and set them up to be able to make healthy food choices when they're older, despite you maybe being a bit more restrictive than other parents?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I've obviously got my own adventure on this, but working with so many families now over the last sort of 8 or 9 years, I only see incredible positive changes. So, yes, there's we have to be a little bit restrictive at the start. We have to put the foot down and we have to create boundaries, and we need to lovingly explain to our children that food is going to feed the, you know, the microbe that's causing you the tummy pains and the headaches and the sleepless nights and, you know, the feeling anxious, that this is the microbe that's doing that or the parasite that's doing that. And so I only see children move through those stages and, yeah, come out the other end with just such a love of food. And then they make great decisions about what food is great choice, and as, you know, as they grow up, and what food is not a great choice. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if we zoom out, our legacy that we leave our children is our children know how to nurture themselves, look after themselves, and make great choices about their bodies and what their bodies need. So having a conversation about party food or being concerned about party food is not, it's not the long-term vision. The long-term vision is about how can our children go through all of these developmental stages and die at almost 100 like my papa did, and know what nourishes them, looks after them, cares for them. So, yes, we become overwhelmed with the, I've got to go to a party. All that's going to be there is fairy bread. My children can't have that. Oh, my gosh, I might as well just not go. This is too hard. You know, we've got to, when we zoom out and look beyond that and think about our children as these amazing adults who know how to nurture themselves and love themselves and not see a party as fairy bread and all these kinds of things, then it's not even a problem, because you see this beautiful long-term picture of what you're doing to create the most amazing relationship with food.
Beautiful. Mm. Beautiful. Yeah, I think that's so important. And so let's say that the child, you know, you can serve up the, what was the example you gave before of the liver pate and the broccoli at the table. Yeah. But what if they won't touch those healing foods that you know are going to be so important for their recovery? How have you navigated that?
Yeah.
Or is it? Yeah. Tell me how that works.
They're not going to. Absolutely not going to if they've got an overgrowth in their gut, if they've got something going on. So I always imagine it to, like, imagine if you've got a petri dish sitting on your hand and you found out that there's yeast in there, in your child's oral microbiome, in their gut microbiome. They've got yeast, they've got candida, they've had thrush. If they've ever had cradle cap, then they're going to have this. It's sitting in the petri dish. That is only going to grow with carbohydrates and sugar. So, of course, if this is the main, you know, yeast that's in their body, of course they're only going to want to eat that. Mm-hmm. It makes sense. It absolutely makes complete sense. So we've got to navigate our expectations of our kids that if they've got all these things going on in their gut, they're not going to want it. So how do we rebuild the gut microbiome to get them to a place that the petri dish is far more diverse? Because, like, I have microbes in my gut now that, like, crave yogurt and crave Brussels sprouts and pate and all of those kinds of things. I never thought I'd see the day, because, you know, chips were my thing and donuts. So, you know, like, our expectations are a need to adjust to what we know about our children. And that's where it comes back to knowledge is power. So if you know that your child's got an imbalance in their gut, or they've got worms, or they've got a parasite or something, you can't, like, rock up to the dinner table and expect them just to eat that, because the microbes send messages from our gut to our brain to make the food choices. So then we go with some sauerkraut juice, and we go with adding in a little bit of, some yogurt or some kefir or some apple kefir. And we start to make this change where we're adding in beautiful microbes and diversity within the gut microbiome. And as that comes up, then your child starts to look at different food as, oh, well, maybe I'll give that a go. So it's a staged process. It's a stepped out process of building this new beautiful microbiome and then getting to the point of those foods being great. So you always put them on the table. We've got to start to build up a relationship with food, and turning off the TV is a really big one. Touching it, feeling it, tactile, being part of it, mum sitting down and eating, or the whole family. And going, like, just kind of drawing a line in the sand and go, like, so Noah had the TV on, had the rice cereal, and I just shoved it in. And then that was our, and he would do it at a different time to mum and dad. That's all I knew. Mm-hmm. We had to go back right to the start at the age of 5 and start all over again. So it's never too late to reshape all of these new things.
Yeah, and that's such a beautiful message, because I know that's what people are worried about, is that I think there's two things: either it's too late, or just this real concern around kind of holding expectations around food, which is the thing that I really want to dispel, because it's okay to lead when it comes to food, and it's okay to, this is the food we're going to eat. And I think that example that you gave around the cast is just such an important one for us to hold in our minds.
Yeah. As an adult, when I was at my worst, I binge ate a lot, and I hid that. And I actually needed my husband to step in and, is that a right choice for you? Because you're going to wake up tomorrow in pain and you're going to regret that. Can I help you? Is this the right choice? So as an adult with a fully developed brain, I couldn't make the right choices to support myself because my gut was so out of whack, and I needed boundaries from someone else to help me. And so we cannot expect our children to do that.
Yeah.
We've got to guide, we've got to support, and they get there and they make all the great decisions on their own. And it's not too late. I had to change my food choices in my mid-30s.
So perfect.
Literally, my dad was 62 when he had to make his changes.
Yeah, yeah. So, and that's so important. It's never too late. It doesn't matter what it is. It's never too late. Yeah.
Never too late. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Kirsty. This has been so helpful, and I think just such an important part of the conversation to really help us see that it's actually a lot of the physical building blocks that we need that are going to help us make those better choices as we get older. And so there are a lot of boundaries and expectations that we need to hold as we help our children build that health from their early years. So I'm really grateful that you came here and shared your story and all of your wisdom. And do you want to just share a little bit about where people can find more about you, that testing you talked about, some of your cultures?
Yes. So Cultured Wellness is where you can find all the information. So on Instagram, I'm always sharing funny things about my adventures with Noah. So you can catch us there. And on the website, culturewellness.com. And on the website, you'll find our section on the clinic, and that's where we do all of our testing. So, you can kind of go on a great grand adventure and learn about your body, and then there's no black and white anymore. Mm. Then you know exactly where you're going and what you're doing. And there's nothing better than not feeling the what ifs and just getting with the treatment plan and just getting back to having fun in life. Mm.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Kirsty.
My pleasure.
Thank you for joining me. If you loved this episode and want more like this, leave a review or screenshot this podcast, share it in your Instagram stories, and tag me at Raising Humanskind. This is such a powerful way to support the podcast and means it will reach more parents who need to hear this message. And if you want to dive deeper, check out the show notes for all the further information so that we can raise our small humans kindly, and together we can raise humankind.